Good morning. It's 11 minutes before 8 o'clock. Today is Tuesday, the 10th of April. I'm Ken Fate, and this is Raven News. It's expected to be a busy night for the Sitka Assembly. They get started with a special meeting at 5 p.m. to consider two property tax exemptions for the former Sheldon Jackson College campus. One exemption is for the Youth Advocates of Sitka. The other is for the Hames Center. Both places are seeking the exemption under the city's community purpose rule, which says buildings that benefit a significant portion of the public don't have to pay property tax. When the regular meeting gets underway at 6 p.m., the Assembly will have a nearly 300-page agenda to work through. It includes deciding whether Dawn Mahoney Menendez can operate a daycare with more than four children at her home on First Street. A zoning variance that would let her do that has been recommended by the Planning Commission, but is opposed by Valerie and Connor Nelson. The daycare issue is one of four zoning matters on the Assembly's agenda tonight. Other permits include two short-term rentals and the appeal of variances granted to Boyd Diedrichsen. Contract agreements for work on Sitka's drinking water supply, the Blue Lake expansion project, and transportation to a private cruise ship dock out Halibut Point Road are on the agenda too. The meeting is expected to end with a discussion on the Sitka School District's 2013 budget. The Assembly and the School Board will meet in a work session to discuss school finances on Thursday. Tonight's proceedings begin with a special meeting at 5 p.m. inside Harrigan Centennial Hall. Raven Radio will provide live coverage of the regular session, which begins an hour later at 6 p.m. Sea Alaska will distribute about $14 million to shareholders and smaller corporations this week. Checks will be mailed on or around Thursday. Direct deposits to bank accounts will be made at the same time. The Juneau-based regional native corporation has about 21,000 shareholders. A little less than half live in Southeast Alaska. The corporation pays out different sized dividends to several classes of shareholders. Most own 100 shares, though some have larger or smaller numbers. Those who are part of an urban native corporation, such as Juneau's Gold Belt, will receive $845 based on 100 shares. At-large shareholders who are not part of an urban or village corporation get the same amount. Shareholders who are part of a village corporation receive $125. The same is true for descendant shareholders. Elders in any category receive an additional $125 per 100 shares. The difference between urban and village shareholder payouts is a pool of regional corporations' resource earnings. Sea Alaska pays that part of the dividend directly to urban and at-large tribal members. It passes it on to village corporations, which decide whether to pass it on to their shareholders. Last spring's dividend was $716 for urban and at-large shareholders and $122 for village shareholders. Spring of 2010's payment was $412 and $236 per 100 shares. The corporation also has a fall payout. Sea Alaska owns timber, gravel, environmental services, plastics, and other businesses in Alaska, the Lower 48, and Mexico. Gold Belt says it does not want its land to be in a borough with Petersburg or Juneau. The Juneau Native Corporation reaffirmed its current position on the issue in a letter to the state late last month. Gold Belt is a major private landowner in an area that Petersburg included in its proposed borough. Matt Lichtenstein reports.
Gold Belt owns 30,000 acres of remote land at Hobart Bay, which is within the north end of Petersburg's proposed borough boundaries. The city and borough of Juneau is trying to annex roughly half the territory Petersburg wants for its borough, including the Gold Belt lands. Both Petersburg and Juneau argue that their communities have extensive current and historic ties to the contested area, which stretches along the mainland from Cape Fanshawe to Juneau's southern boundary at Holcomb Bay. In a March 28th letter to the local boundary commission, Gold Belt objected to inclusion of their land in either borough. Gold Belt said as much in an earlier letter last fall. At the same time, though, the corporation also said it would study its options and state its borough preference in the future. Petersburg officials had hoped they could win the corporation's support. They were disappointed, according to city manager Steve Giesbrecht.
We would love to have the Gold Belt Corporation in, you know, Hobart Bay as part of the Petersburg borough, and you know, we still think there's a high possibility that's going to happen, but We understand where Gold Belt's coming from.
Gold Belt's current opposition marks a reversal for the corporation. Under different leadership in 2007, Gold Belt wrote a letter to Petersburg saying it wanted its Hobart Bay lands to be part of Petersburg's proposed borough and not part of the city and borough of Juneau. In Gold Belt's latest correspondence, board chair Karen Taug asked the LBC to consider a major change to Petersburg's proposed boundaries. It would leave out the territory surrounding Hobart Bay as well as Windham Bay to the north and Port Hooton to the south. That land, according to the letter, could later be organized into a separate borough that would include Cake, Angoon, and Hoonah. Petersburg's borough petition provides the impetus, according to Taug, who recognized it would take several years for the smaller towns to organize. She wrote, quote, "While each of these native communities would prefer no borough at all, we are convinced that the common bonds of culture, background, and families are far more appropriate together than any possible annexation that would couple these communities with largely non-native urban areas," unquote. Petersburg officials question whether such a borough would ever be formed, and they point out that no such petition has been filed. City Manager Giesbrecht.
You know, the challenge with that is I think the LBC is going to be looking and saying if that's what they want to do, they need to get that filed and get it going. And because of that and the state's willingness to really want everything to be in a borough, I think the Petersburg borough boundaries as they currently been recommended by the LBC staff are pretty well supported.
But Gold Belt CEO Bob Lozell sees no benefit from having the corporation's lands potentially subject to taxes and regulation in a Petersburg or Juneau borough. He agreed to speak on the record about the issue but declined to have his voice recorded. Lozell said that given the remote nature of the area, neither city could provide services there. He noted that the Native Corporation land can only be taxed if it's developed. Gold Belt logged its Hobart lands extensively in the past. It has since considered tourism development there, but Lozell said the corporation has no current plans for that in the works. A future Gold Belt development could be subject to tax within either borough. Juneau Mayor Bruce Botello says it's critical that people who are going to be taxed have a voice in the local government that levies that tax.
For example, Gold Belt shareholders are overwhelmingly located in Juneau. They would have the ability to influence how we apply our taxation scheme and more generally how we would intend to administer local government. That would not be the case if this area were incorporated into the city and borough of Petersburg.
Relatively few Gold Belt shareholders live in Petersburg. Juneau, Petersburg, Gold Belt, and a half dozen individuals filed letters in response to the local boundary commission staff's preliminary report on Petersburg's borough petition by last month's comment deadline. With the exception of a relatively minor boundary change, the staff report recommended approval of the plan as submitted. The staff is expected to come out with a final report sometime before the commission meets on the issue in Petersburg in late May. I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
Alaskan hunters who forgot to file their newly required deer harvest reports this year have another chance. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has sent out a reminder form. Also, people who filed their report through the internet are asked to file again on paper because of problems with the new online system. All hunters who picked up deer tags last season were supposed to file the reports earlier this year whether or not they actually bagged a deer. Less than half did so, according to wildlife biologist Karen McCoy.
Statewide, there's about 20,000 hunters, roughly, that get deer harvest tickets. And as an initial response, about 40%, approximately 40% of those have responded so far. So not quite as high as, we had hoped, but, it's not a bad start for our first year and not too far below what we've done before with our randomized survey for the initial contact.
In past years, the state sent out a random voluntary survey to estimate effort and harvest. The Alaska Board of Game replaced that with the new reporting requirement for all deer hunters in Alaska starting this past season. Hunters could fill out the paper harvest form that came with their deer tags, or they could report with the new online system. About 12% of respondents filed online, and McCoy says the instructions could have been better.
We did get some feedback from hunters that there was some confusion with the online reporting, and I think that largely has to do with not as many directions as we could have as provided to them. So we're hoping to correct that next year and to be much more clear in exactly what they need to do with online reporting and to improve that system to make it more user-friendly.
The department is asking those who filed online this year to report again using the paper form they get in the mail. That's in order to help check the accuracy of the new system and make sure all the data was recorded. McCoy says the harvest information is an important management tool.
This deer harvest data is really one of our fundamental ways of tracking what's going on with deer populations. Not only does it, you know, allow us to estimate deer harvest, but it allows us to look at hunter effort and success to try and get an idea of what fluctuations might be happening with the deer populations out in the field. And that data is very important for the, Board of Game and the Federal Subsistence Board in helping to, make decisions on setting seasons and bag limits when those questions come up.
Deer hunters can expect to receive a new harvest report form in the mail soon. A bill that would back community foundations with state cash has passed the Alaska House. HB 290 from House Majority Leader Alan Osterman envisions giving an annual grant to a statewide organization that would in turn offer grants to community foundations with a match for every dollar raised. The bill calls for a maximum of $25,000 each year per community, and matching funds would be assigned annually to 3 to 5 communities. Osterman calls the idea the Endow Alaska Grant Program and says the goal is to spur local investment and help communities set their own priorities. Opponents question the idea of backing private giving with state funds, but the measure passed 30-8, and the vote bill now moves to the Senate for consideration. It's 8:01. This is Raven Radio, KCAW in Sydney.